Welcome to East Meets West. I'm Olga, born, raised, and living here in Moscow, Russia.
I'm Tara, and I was born and raised in the United States of America in California, and I came to Russia in 2023. I came under political asylum, and then this year I received my passport from by presidential decree from President Putin. And I decided to stay because I just fell in love with Russia, the culture, the beauty of it, and also the people. And one of the people that I met was Olga, who's become such a good friend. And whenever we would get together, we would talk about geopolitics and, you know, the differences and the sameness of Russia and the United States.
So we've just decided why not to discuss it on air, inviting guests both from East and West, so that you have perspectives from across the ocean, so to say. And the first guest is already with us, Ambassador Dmitry Polyansky, who has just moved from New York, where he used to be the first deputy permanent representative of Russia to the United Nations, to Vienna, where he is the permanent representative of Russia to the OSCE, which is Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. Ambassador Polyansky, very happy to have you on our first episode.
Pleasure is mine. Hello, Olga. Hello, Tara.
Ambassador Polyansky, I can't help asking as the first question, how do you see your new appointment? Because, you know, a lot of people say that the United Nations is not able to establish peace anywhere now. But it seems that OSCE and other European entities are not even trying to. So how do you see your new appointment?
Well, you can definitely see my new appointment from this angle, and you will have all the reasons to do so. It depends on whether you are optimistic, pessimistic, romantic, non-romantic. So I would say that OSCE is another international organization. It has a different scope from the United Nations, for sure. I have a different set of counterparts here, and those who are criticizing us most, those who are not forthcoming and constructive, are mostly those who are sitting in front of me at the table. But nevertheless, OSCE is charged by a very important thing. It's European security. And Russia was trying for many years to make its position seen and heard, that we are moving towards serious issues, serious problems in this regard. Unfortunately, our concerns were not heeded by many who are now trying to find a solution or trying to blame everything on Russia. It depends on the country, on a group of people who is there. But nevertheless, nobody is saying that what we're having now is end of our dreams, that this is perfect. So UN is not perfect. OSCE is far from being perfect. OSCE has lost its compass, I would say. But there are people with whom you need to speak. There are also diplomats there who have also channels of communication with their capital, and it's a good platform for us to make our position known and seen. And that's why I'm trying, and my intention is to use it at maximum during my stay here in Vienna, and to try to make a change. Of course, it takes two to tango, and it takes many people to work hand in glove with me if we want to achieve something. So far, it's not the case, but I'm not discouraged by this, and I am ready to continue to engage.
So, as you've just mentioned, the OSCE was created in the 70s to guarantee security architecture in Europe and to serve as a kind of a platform for dialogue between, back then, the USSR and the European countries. Is there anything left of it now? Because, you know, I would suggest that most of the viewers from the United States, for example, they have no clue what OSCE is doing now. So what this organization is actually doing at the moment?
Well, first of all, I want to make another surprise for viewers in the U.S., saying that the United States is a member of this organization. It's a member from the outset, and it was participating in the Helsinki process, which in 1975 led to the signature of Helsinki Final Act, which gradually in 1995 brought us to the establishment of this organization. It's a very specific organization, by the way. Many people don't know, but this organization doesn't have a charter, doesn't have the basic rules. So there is a number of documents, a number of agreements which keep it afloat and which substitute the basis for our work here. And OSCE, first and foremost, is a very important discussion platform. OSCE is meant to be a very important preventive tool in terms of preventing some conflicts in the European continent, but unfortunately it failed repeatedly on a lot of issues, including Ukraine. So OSCE so far is, when you speak about importance of this organization, I would answer you with one thing. OSCE is the only pan-European organization where Russia and its former Western partners, let's put it this way, and now Western opponents from Europe are sitting at the same table, because there is not such an organization where we can speak and be heard. UN, of course, is one of them, but UN agenda is different from the agenda of OSCE. OSCE is dealing with crisis and security situation in Europe. Yes, we are not on the same page. Yes, we are far from being on the same page, and I don't know even if we are reading the same book. But nevertheless, we are able to speak and we are able to address each other there. And this is a very important channel of communication, which you can't disregard, especially at our very troubling times.
You know, Ambassador, I actually met you in New York City when you were working for the UN. So you worked there many years, and there's a great deal of tension. And I observed personally that the Russian Federation delegation was not treated very well at all. And your movements were restricted. It was a very hostile environment. Has that changed in your new living situation in Vienna, Austria, and or because the tensions are so high in Europe? Is it the same? So what is your day-to-day like?
Well, I haven't got yet, I would say, the feeling of how it is going on here, because I'm mostly spending most of my time here trying to get the understanding of what kind of issues I'm facing here work-wise. So I haven't got many opportunities to stroll around, especially to travel. But my first impression is very positive, I would say. So there are different people here, different kinds of people. Some of them are quite friendly, and some of them are really and sincerely wanting to find a solution which would bring us together. They understand that a lot of things were done wrong by the West, and they want to understand where it started to get wrong and maybe to make some amends. Other people are very belligerent. Other people are still trying to kind of present Russia as a sort of all the problems. If you have problems at your house, if you have your pipes burnt or something like this, you also need to blame Russia for this. That's their logic. And there is a number of people. In day-to-day life, so far I haven't come across of any hostility towards myself, but I'm not openly walking around the street and saying that I'm Russian representative to the OSCE. Maybe that would change your attitude. But again, a lot of Russian speakers, and it's very hard to distinguish between Russians and Ukrainians, for example, because Ukrainians abroad, when there are no Russians around, also speak Russian among themselves. That's not
right.
A revelation.
Right.
And exactly.
Very traveling, it's a bit easier after being confined to 25 miles in New York City. Now at least I have the whole of West Austria where I can travel without any problems. And also to neighboring countries, but we need a notification sent to the authorities of these countries beforehand, which is not a big deal, which is doable. And of course, I will say my cage here is much wider than the cage that was in New York City.
So if I can just follow up on what you just said, Ambassador Polyansky, as far as peace talks are concerned, it seems that Europe is even more hostile to Russia than the United States, because it seems that the United States is fostering peace talks while Europe is kind of trying to torpedo it, at least from how I see it from outside. How do you see it from inside?
I think you have a perception which is very close to reality, because if United States is really meaning to make a change and to kind of promote these negotiations, to find the solutions which would be based on this anchorage spirit that we both endorsed back in August, Europe tries to squeeze in, first of all, to get this place at the table by any price, and also to kind of, you know, to save the Kyiv regime, to save it in the way it is, to save it intact, because Europe has invested so much time in lies about Kyiv regime, in inflating this bubble of lies, that it's very painful for them to acknowledge that that this regime has two faces, two colors, which are very different from what European countries, from values European countries are promoting elsewhere. So this is very painful for them. That's why they are trying to present the situation as if at these talks right now, the only question is this question of territory, and that's the only issue that needs to be solved, and then they will go for elections, and that they will preserve the regime as it is. This will not work. And I think everybody was quite clear about this, including Sergei Lavrov recently, saying that this will not work. The question is, how will this remainder of Ukraine look like? And we got quite serious, I would say, reassurance from the Americans that they are ready to look into these root causes of this conflict, to the not only to NATO enlargement and expansion, but also to the position, to the situation of Russian speakers, to their rights, to the nazification of Ukraine, and we should be denazified, to militarization of Ukraine. All these issues are on the table, and nobody will have a deal from our side that would kind of omit these things. So it's not about territory. It has never been about territory. It's about people. Territory is there only because these regions are now part of Russian Federation from the point of view of our constitution. But it's about people, of how their rights will be ensured after there is a deal, settlement there. And that's where Europe plays a very destructive role so far, trying to undermine, to derail these talks and to kind of boil them down to a certain territorial issue which Russia is not ready to kind of resolve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you're saying reminds me of how the U.S. kept hammering down about a ceasefire, and Putin was agreeing with whatever terms, like in Alaska, to try to get to a lasting peace, but the lasting peace was the goal. There was such hope a couple weeks ago that the peace talks were going to resolve and finally we'd have peace, but there was the stall, and then now it's been overshadowed, and you have, like, the UK Prime Minister might be stepping down. You have a scandal from the Epstein files that has shook the American consciousness, I would say. It's pretty much all Americans are talking about. Has the scandals that are bringing down some people in very powerful places because of the Epstein files impacting and overshadowing the peace talks? Is it having that effect as well?
Well, first of all, I need to confess I'm not in the loop to the extent that I would say how this affects spirit and negotiations which are going elsewhere. They're not going on in Vienna. I'm not part of them. Of course, I get information about this, but I'm not in the immediate loop, I would put it this way. Secondly, in these Epstein files, I can tell you that it's a very knee-jerk reflex of Western ally to blame everything on Russia. Everything that's happening bad in the world is because of Putin, because of Russia. It's the easiest way, and people are even joking about this. So it was only a matter of time when they would try to find a certain twist, a very artificial, a certain, I don't know, situation that they will, of course, imagine and put Russia behind this. This was inevitable, and this is how the elite is reacting and trying to kind of shift the responsibility, shift the blame for these absolutely disgraceful things that are being depicted in the documents that are coming out. Of course, there is an avalanche right now in Europe. I don't know how it is affecting European position, but of course a lot of politicians who are being affected and who were part of this very shameful behavior, they need to be held accountable by Europeans. But it's up to them. They should be held accountable for a lot of things that they are doing, for bringing their societies, their countries on a brink of war against Russia, on portraying Russia as an enemy, as a source of everything evil that is happening in this world. I think they should be held accountable for that as well. So Epstein file, I don't think it's the biggest headache that is overshadowing the negotiations. But of course, from European side, they have to be mindful of this because it affects a lot of those who otherwise try to present themselves absolutely sane and, you know, untouchable. So it's up to them to decide.
Ambassador Polyansky, getting back to the OSCE, once there is a peace agreement, peace settlement, and one day it definitely will be. I mean, it will all end in a peace settlement. So when it's there, can OSCE play any role, have any monitoring functions in the implementation of this peace agreement, or is its legacy and like the aftertaste it had after Minsk agreement too bad to allow it to have any role?
Well, that's what I'm always telling my counterparts here, that they shouldn't be taken for granted. They shouldn't be kind of planning certain actions from OSCE at the moment when there is an eventual deal on Ukraine, because nobody will nobody might remember about OSCE in these circumstances. It's not the only show in the town, and it's really has compromised itself very significantly. You mentioned the SMM, of course, which is the biggest, I would say, sin of OSCE. But OSCE has long before, instead of becoming a pan-European security organization that would embrace Russian interests alongside with the interests of other neighbors of Russia at the continent, it has gradually been transformed by the actions of certain politicians into another, I would say, head of this Euro-Atlantic security organization alongside with NATO. And this was a deliberate choice. So in such a state, to imagine that this organization can play a certain role, unless it finds a certain, different setting, a certain different mindset towards Russia, it's very hard to imagine it, frankly. And I am telling my colleagues that we now need to have a bigger picture in mind, because NATO is not only a European or Euro-Atlantic organization right now. It has ambitions which go far beyond the European continent. We know that NATO is becoming directly or indirectly more active in Asia, in East Asia, in Southeast Asia. And that's why we invite everybody to think now not only about some kind of European security, which is important, but as a Eurasian security structure, which would embrace more players, which would embrace more geographic scope, and which would be based on this very necessary concept of indivisible security, where security of any country should not be achieved at the expense of security of the others, and that no country or block of countries would dominate this security sphere in Eurasia as such. So that's why OSCE, with its European security efforts, may become a little bit sidelined here. And of course, they need to find their place in this process, and we invite them to do it. But we have now in mind some bigger scope, some bigger issue. And of course, it is very much premature. And I would say there are no reasons for OSCE to be doing any planning on terms of possible monitoring or whatever involvement at the moment when there is eventually a deal.
You know, we've been hearing a lot from Donald Trump. He speaks quite openly, whereas the Russian delegation is quite quiet about, and as it should be, confidential about what's happening with the peace talks. But Donald Trump is loudly saying there's going to be a deadline. The deadline is June. How serious is his deadline being taken by those involved in the foreign ministry with these peace talks and listening to the rhetoric coming from the United States?
Well, I think that in order to get an exact answer to this, you should be addressing those involved in the foreign ministry or elsewhere. But I understand our logic is that there is a big space for quiet diplomacy right now, and it's not about boasting about certain conditions or kind of flashing them in public. It's about very meticulous, painstaking work of negotiators which are trying to bring different sides closer to a certain understanding, to a certain solution. It's not megaphone diplomacy. It's not something that is being discussed in public. This is totally opposite exercise. That's why I think we shouldn't be now trying to comment on what Trump says, what Trump does about any deadlines, whatever. The process is ongoing. We are in this process. It's not going absolutely without any problems. There are problems, and I think that recently my leadership by Sergei Lavrov and I think Press Secretary Peskov also made it clear that there are certain things that we don't like there. But I would stop there. I would leave it here, and I would leave the right to comment on it by those who are directly involved, by those who are in the loop. And also, I would implore everybody to stick to quiet diplomacy in such issues and not to try to make everything public, because this is still in the making and this is still very sensitive. And our aim is to come to some final decision, which would be acceptable to everyone, and which would, of course, base on what I said about correcting this nature of Kyiv regime, its true colors, to make life for Russian speakers, for all Ukrainians, quite easier and in accordance with the basic democratic and other norms. That is not the case so far in Ukraine. Let's go to maybe some final question, because I need to rush for a meeting right now.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. If I may get back to the UN, from what we know, President Trump is going to hold the first official meeting of his Board of Peace on February 19th. And the agenda is far from focusing solely on Gaza. What do you think of this ambition of President Trump? Is he in some way going to replace the United Nations with this Board of Peace that he's creating and he's going to chair?
Well, I think that while giving any assessment of this situation, we should first and foremost stick to the guarantees and to kind of reassurances that we heard at the moment when it was initiated, this Board of Peace, that it will not undermine the work of Security Council. It's not something, some rivalry to the UN. That was said by President Trump himself. And that, I think, is a very interesting and important starting point for any other discussion. Secondly, as far as we are concerned, we had the impression, and I know it from the comments of my leaders, that this structure is more about Gaza, about the way the resolution that was adopted by the Security Council, 2803, if I'm not mistaken, if I still remember correctly, is being implemented. And this resolution, this Board of Peace is named, and there are specific tasks to this Board of Peace, and they all fall within the scope of this Gaza problem. So that's our starting point in analyzing this situation. Of course, we will see how it develops, in any case, any peace initiative, any initiative that will stop fighting in Gaza, that will contribute to the ceasefire and that people will stop dying in Gaza, is welcome. That was the optics that we approached, with which we approached this kind of proposal. But of course, we'll see. We'll see how it develops.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for spending so much time with us. Really, best of luck to you on your day-to-day and adjusting to your new role. Congratulations.
And also congratulations on the Diplomats' Day that was celebrated in Russia.
Thank you very much, and I wish you good luck to your project. I am absolutely sure that it will be popular and that a lot of people will follow it. And you can count on me at any moment when you need me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ambassador. Thank you so much. So, unfortunately, that's all we have time for as for now. But please stay in touch. Please send us your guest suggestions, maybe your questions that you would like to ask but don't dare to. Me and Tara will do it for you here on East Meets West.
See you next time. Peace and take care. Baka baka.
Baka baka. Bye-bye.
Bye.